New Year's Eve, 2014, 29-year-old Rob McKernan and 26-year-old Colleen McKernan were getting ready to ring in the new year for the first time as husband and wife in Massillon, Ohio. Though they had both graduated from the same high school 3 years apart, Colleen and Rob didn't actually meet each other until 2013. A mutual friend, Kelly, had introduced them, and within 6 months, Rob and Colleen were engaged, house hunting, and eventually married. Colleen graduated from Perry High School in Massillon in 2006 and wasn't ready to go to college because she wasn't sure what she wanted to pursue career-wise. She enlisted in the U.S. Air Force, where she served in the security forces, the military's police, in Turkey and Afghanistan. While she was deployed in Turkey, she got engaged to a fellow serviceman, but later broke off the engagement when she was transferred to Afghanistan. When she was discharged, Colleen moved to New York to start college, graduating in 2013 with a bachelor's degree in business management and leadership. After graduation, Colleen moved back to Massillon to start working at a financial services company. A few months later, she was introduced to Rob by her high school friend, Kelly Bonifante. Rob was a 2003 graduate of Perry High School, and he had also served in the U.S. Air Force, working in missile maintenance for 3 years. When they met, Rob was working at his father's business, specializing in engineering and manufacturing oil rig machinery. Colleen said she and Rob became Facebook friends shortly after meeting at Kelly's house. They exchanged numbers and started texting and talking on the phone every day. A month later, the couple was exclusive. But while on the outside, it may have looked like a happy marriage, Colleen and Rob's marriage started to fall apart after just a few months. Routine arguments turned into fights, and fights often turned physical. On December 31st, 2014, 8 months of fighting would culminate in tragedy. On the night of December 31st, 2014, the McKernans made plans to go to a party with some friends. After the party, they planned to watch the ball drop at midnight and set off fireworks with their neighbors across the street. Colleen and Rob met some friends at a bar called Kendall's Tavern and then drove to their friends Zach and Brittany's house around 8 p.m. While there, Colleen didn't know very many people, so she played with the dog, and a few hours later, the group walked to Tucker's Tavern to start bar hopping. At the bar, the two couples did several rounds of shots, alternating paying for the drinks. They spent about a half hour at the bar before walking back to Zach and Brittany's house at 10:30. During their walk, Colleen and Rob discussed getting a cab and heading to their neighbors, the Sakotas, for the rest of the night. Colleen told Rob she wanted to leave, but Rob wanted to stay at Zach and Brittany's party a little longer. The couple argued on their way to their friend's house, but had calmed down by the time they arrived. A few minutes later, Colleen went outside and saw Rob bent over a white substance on a table. She got upset and yelled at Rob until Brittany shouted at them to quiet down or leave. Rob and Colleen left the party at 10:55 p.m. and made their way home. About 5 minutes later, at around 11 p.m., a call about a shooting came into the Massillon police dispatch. A tearful Colleen told the dispatcher, quote, "I'm really drunk. My husband put his hands on me and I shot him." She said she was doing CPR and the dispatcher could hear her crying and counting the compressions. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. When police responded a few minutes later, they found Rob's body on the top floor of the two-story home. Around his body were 10 shell casings and his car keys. Colleen was hunched over his body doing CPR. She was covered in his blood. Officers immediately placed her in handcuffs and took her to the Massillon Police Headquarters. Today, I'm covering the case of Colleen McKernan, charged with murdering her husband Rob after just 8 months of marriage. After two trials resulted in hung juries and were declared mistrials, Colleen pleaded guilty to voluntary manslaughter charges in 2017. She was sentenced to 7 years in prison with a chance for early release. During both trials, prosecutors made the case that Colleen was a hot-tempered control freak who killed Rob in a drunken fit of anger, while her defense team claimed she killed him in self-defense. Her lawyers said she chose to accept reduced charges in order to spare her family a third trial and to move on with her life. But was this ending fair? Was Colleen a battered and abused woman who killed her husband in self-defense? Or did she kill him after a night of alcohol-fueled rage? This is Jillian, and you are listening to Court Junkie, Episode 86. When Massillon police responded to Rob and Colleen's Oak Trail Street Northeast home, Rob was showing no signs of life. Police ruled his death a homicide, and because Colleen had admitted to shooting him during her 911 call, police were able to charge her with Rob's murder within days of the incident. Colleen was put on electronically monitored house arrest and was only allowed to leave the house to meet with her attorneys or to make court appearances. Colleen pleaded not guilty to Rob's murder in April of 2015, the month that should have marked the couple's one-year wedding anniversary. A year later, in April 2016, Colleen's first trial started in Stark County Court. Colleen's lawyer, Ian Friedman, argued that Colleen shot Rob because she suffered from battered woman syndrome after four violent episodes of abuse before Rob's death. Prosecutors made the case that Colleen had shot him out of uncontrollable anger. But by the end of all the witness testimony and evidence, the 12-person jury was split 7-5 for a guilty verdict. Jury deliberations took 2 days before Stark County Judge Krissa Hartnett declared a mistrial. Colleen's second trial was scheduled for 4 months later in August 2016. She was still facing 18 years in prison for Rob's murder and would still face the same judge and prosecutors from her first trial. Both of Colleen's trials were very similar, so for the purposes of this episode, we're going to focus on what happened during the most recent proceedings. Colleen's second trial started on August 23rd, 2016. Prosecutor Melissa Day, who was trying the case with Prosecutor Dennis Barr, told the court during her opening statement that Colleen shot Rob in an alcohol-fueled fit of rage after a tumultuous 8-month marriage. Day argued that Colleen was simply angry with Rob because she thought he was doing drugs at the New Year's Eve party. She said Colleen didn't have battered woman syndrome and instead was a confident, controlling, and outspoken woman, completely in control of her marriage. Colleen hired two different attorneys to represent her during the second trial, Max Hiltner and Laura Mills. They did their best in their opening statements to paint Colleen as a hometown girl who had returned to Massillon to settle down after serving in the military. Hiltner said Colleen married Rob because he was charming and fun, but soon after their April 2014 wedding, he became possessive and jealous. During his opening statements, Hiltner described the events that led to Rob's death on December 31st, 2014. He said that Rob drove drunk after leaving the party with Colleen and then became physically aggressive. Hiltner said Rob forced Colleen out of the car and into their home with his hands on her neck. Just as Colleen was about to call 911, Hiltner said Rob told her he would give her a reason to call the police. He said Colleen, feeling threatened by Rob and knowing he had a past history of abusing her and other women, took her gun from their bedroom and tried to escape the house. Rob blocked her from leaving, Hiltner said, and when Colleen told him to back up, he instead came towards her, and so she fired her gun. After she realized what she had done, she called 911 and tried to revive Rob with CPR. Hiltner argued that Colleen had acted in self-defense, fearing that Rob would hurt her again. After the opening statements, Mitch Nickel, a friend of both Rob and Colleen's, testified, and he began to paint a picture for the jury of what had happened the night Rob was killed. Mitch, a friend of Rob's since middle school, said he was out drinking with Rob and Colleen at Tucker's Tavern that night. He said the group of friends did four rounds of shots before walking back to Zach and Brittany's house to continue the party. Mitch said that Rob and Colleen were getting along at the bar and that nothing seemed wrong. But by the time they were leaving and walking back to the house, he said he could tell that they were feeling the effects of the alcohol. Mitch said he heard Colleen start a conversation on their walk back to their friend's home about where the $100 they had set aside for the night had gone. The conversation quickly turned into a loud argument, he said. When they got to Zach and Brittany's house, Mitch said he saw Colleen go inside the house while Rob stayed outside. Later, Mitch testified that he saw Rob bent over a table outside, preparing to snort some white powder, so he gave Rob a heads up when he saw Colleen coming outside. But when Colleen saw Rob bent over the table, the fight reignited and the couple had a loud argument outside the house. Brittany Martin, the homeowner, testified that she told Colleen and Rob to be quiet or leave. Mitch and Brittany both said that Colleen and Rob decided to leave the party instead of making a scene. After Mitch's testimony, Rob and Colleen's neighbor, Mike Sakotas, testified that he had seen the couple earlier that evening when they were on their way to Kendall's bar to start their New Year's Eve. Mike said that he also thought that Rob and Colleen had seemed normal earlier in the evening. Mike lived across the street from them with his two daughters and girlfriend, Abby. He had known them since they had moved into the neighborhood about 8 months before. Mike only testified for a few minutes on the first day of the trial, but he was able to corroborate a lot of the details of the timeline of events leading up to Rob's death. He saw the couple earlier in the evening on their way out to celebrate, and just before 11 p.m., he said he heard the distinctive roar of Rob's black market exhaust pipe coming up the street. He, his girlfriend Abby, and a few friends had been drinking and playing cards, waiting for the McKernans to come over and watch the ball drop. A few minutes later, Mike heard what sounded like knocking, and so he went to answer his front door. Nobody was outside, so he went back into the home and rejoined his guests. Prosecutors asked Mike if he thought the knocks he heard that night could have been the gunshots that killed Rob. A gun owner himself, Mike said yes, it was possible that the knocking sound he had heard was actually gunfire. At the end of the first day of the trial, the jury heard testimony from Captain Robert Knapp, a firefighter and paramedic with the Massillon Fire Department, who had responded to the McKernan house the night of the shooting. Captain Knapp said he was working a 24-hour shift that night and responded to the scene with an ambulance and four officers after Colleen's 911 call came through. When he got there, he said he located Rob's body on the second floor of the house near the dining room table. He said Rob showed no signs of life at that time. Massillon Police Patrol Officer Sean Dadisman testified after Knapp and said he had gone home for the night at 10 p.m. But at 11 p.m., a Massillon police detective called him in to assist with the investigation. Officer Dadisman went to police headquarters and obtained a search warrant for the McKernan's house, a standard procedure for police departments during homicide investigations. He then left to assist detectives with collecting evidence at the McKernan's home. He said that when he arrived at the scene, he observed no signs that an altercation between Rob and Colleen had taken place. He told the court that nothing in the hallway where Rob was killed was out of place. Officer Dadisman said an upright baby gate used for keeping the dog out of certain parts of the house and a shelving unit in the hallway were both intact. He said he observed that all the picture frames in the hallway were still on the walls, and there was no blood spatter or blood drops throughout the house that may have indicated a violent struggle. Officer Dadisman testified that Rob's body was in the upstairs hallway, surrounded by shell casings. Some of the casings were close to the body, while others were a few feet away. On the second day of Colleen's trial, The chief investigator for the Stark County Coroner's Office, Harry Campbell, took the stand. Campbell, who is also a police officer, offered the jurors more details about Rob's fatal injuries. Campbell said he arrived on scene about an hour before Massillon police detectives. He started to take pictures of the scene around Rob's body. He said from what he observed, Rob suffered from numerous gunshot wounds to the chest, to the belly, to the left arm, and to the mouth. He said he found two teeth fragments belonging to Rob above his head, and the Glock gun used to shoot him about 4 feet away from his body. Dr. Frank Miller, the chief coroner for Stark County, performed Rob's autopsy and testified at the end of the second day. He said that Rob was both examined and x-rayed post-mortem. He said Rob was shot 10 times in the chest, head, and upper extremities. He testified that Rob was also grazed by a bullet on his right arm. Dr. Miller couldn't say in which order the bullets were fired, but he did say the two shots to Rob's mouth were made from 2 or 3 feet away. He could tell, he said, because of gunpowder residue on Rob's body.
When referring to guns and positions of the body, all I can tell is where the muzzle is angled. Because bullets move so fast, we can sort of assume that the barrel and the body are fixed in space for that one moment till the bullet comes and hits the body. So if somebody is alleged to be hanging upside down and that makes the path straight, that's possible. Laying on the floor, laying on their front, laying on their back, laying on their side, there are myriad ways for the gun and the body to meet in a perpendicular fashion or an upward fashion or a downward fashion. It depends where the body is and where the gun is. If you see in the movies, people hold their gun like this. Other people hold it straight. I have no idea.
He also testified that Rob had a blood alcohol content of 0.125 the night he died, which was above Ohio's legal limit to drive and would have led to impairment in motor skills and judgment. However, Dr. Miller testified that no drugs were found in Rob's system during the autopsy. The second and third days of Colleen's trial focused heavily on testimony from law enforcement and criminal justice professionals. After Dr. Miller, Detective Jason Golke, a Massillon police officer for 11 years, testified. Like Officer Dadisman, Detective Golte responded first to the Massillon police station on December 31st, 2014. He said he saw Colleen sitting on a chair outside of the booking area, wearing a blazer, pants, and socks, but no shoes. He said she had blood on her face, hands, and on the lapel of her blazer, but he didn't see any external injuries. During Detective Golke's testimony, the prosecution played the 911 call Colleen placed after the shooting. On the call, Colleen can be heard saying, "I'm drunk. My husband put his hands on me, and I shot him." Detective Golke said that after responding to police headquarters and being briefed on the situation, he went to the scene with Officer Dadisman to start the investigation. He said he walked around the house and did a thorough search in the upstairs of the house where Rob was killed. He said he saw shell casings at the top of the stairs and in the hallway, and he observed Colleen's gun next to Rob's body. He also testified that he observed a cut white straw also near Rob's body. Colleen's attorneys made the case that the straw could have been used by Rob earlier in the evening to use drugs, but that straw was never collected for evidence. Detective Golke said that if he had known at the time that Colleen and Rob had fought about possible drug use the night of his death, he would have tested that straw for drug residue. However, because the coroner found no drugs in his system, Detective Golke said the presence of the straw would have had little impact on the criminal investigation. Colleen took the witness stand on the fourth day of her trial. One of her attorneys, Laura Mills, questioned her about her service in the military, about her prior relationships, and about how she had met Rob. Colleen told the court how she and Rob were introduced by their mutual friend Kelly in October of 2013. She said Rob had a son from a former relationship and he told her that he had been arrested for domestic violence more than once before. Colleen said this worried her because she had never been with a man who had quite a history with police, but she set that worry aside and moved forward with their relationship.
Colleen, how did you feel once Rob had told you that he had prior arrests?
Well, I was taken back because I had never dated someone that had this type, who had had the police called on him by other women. And so I didn't know what to think of it. And of course, it freaked me out. And I took some time and I ended up accepting Rob's explanation and I chose to trust him.
Okay. And after you chose to trust him, did you talk about your relationship becoming more serious?
Some time had passed because I had been gone for about 6 weeks. And I was at a point in my life where I graduated college, starting a career. I was looking to get married. And I was looking at houses before I even met Rob to buy one. So we discussed, where our relationship was going and what we were going to do moving forward.
6 months after meeting for the first time, Rob and Colleen got married at Hocking Hills State Park, a few hours away from their home in Massillon. But as soon as they tied the knot, Colleen said that Rob started to act insanely jealous. They had had disagreements before about remodeling the house and money, but the fights were escalating, she said. She was asked about the first time he ever called her something inappropriate. She described how, a short time after they married, Colleen had to go to Michigan for a week-long National Guard training. She said Rob would call her every day and told her that he wanted her to go to her hotel room once training was over. Colleen said she refused, which made Rob call her names.
Being in the National Guard, we're required to go away once a year for training. And so I went away to Michigan in May. So about a month into our marriage, it was only for a week. And Rob and I, talked, obviously, every day. But he wanted me to go straight from training to my room. And when you go away on these trips, it's a team-building trip. It's where you get to know the people you would deploy with. So you would go and play softball together, go and work out together. He didn't want me doing that. He wanted me going directly to my room. And I didn't, and I said no. And he called me incessantly one night over and over and over again. When I talked to him, he was calling me a whore and a slut, accusing me of cheating on him because he knows how military men are. And I hung up on him.
She said she didn't respond to his messages, and so he called her again and threatened to kill himself if she didn't reply. She called him, worried about his safety, and talked to him until he was calm. And when he came to pick her up from the training in Michigan, they smoothed things over. Colleen said the abuse didn't stop and got worse as time went on. On another occasion, when the couple was out with friends at a bar, she said that Rob grabbed her wrists and told her to stop dancing like a whore because he didn't want other men looking at her. She said he would frequently make her drop her plans to spend time with him, and he would refuse to pick her up if she was out with colleagues or friends. The tension in their relationship continued to build. Colleen said she wanted to divorce him, but he would threaten her, their pets, and himself. He even once threatened to rip out appliances and floorboards in their home to make her life a living hell, she said. Rob would accuse her of cheating on him and go through her text messages, exploding if he thought she was talking to other men. 6 weeks before the shooting, on November 14th, 2014, Colleen and Rob got into a fight while they were out at a bar with friends. She testified that Rob wanted to go out that night with two friends, but she had to work the next morning and wanted to stay home. She went anyway after making him promise that they'd be home early. As the hours passed, Rob wanted to go bar hopping, and Colleen said she wanted to go home. Angry, he got into the car to take her home. Colleen said he screamed and yelled at her before grabbing her head and hitting it against the car window. When they got home, she said she grabbed her phone, got out of the car, and went to her neighbor Judy's house. She called 911 and asked the dispatcher if the police could keep Rob away from her. When they said they couldn't, she declined to make a report. She testified that she didn't see the point in involving the police if they couldn't help her. Later that night, she woke to Rob smothering her with a pillow. She said the next thing she remembered was waking up in a cold shower with Rob holding her, saying, "Please don't die." Though Rob seemed very apologetic to Colleen after that incident, the abuse didn't stop. A week later, they went out to another bar, and when Colleen decided to go home early, she took Rob's debit card to stop him from drinking too much that night. She testified that when he came home, he screamed and grabbed her off the couch. She said her dog, Scarlett, bit him while he was attacking her, and while he was distracted, she said she kicked him in the groin. Colleen then tried to leave the house, but Rob grabbed her and pulled her back. He ended up leaving the house that night, she said. Another time, Colleen said she found Rob's unpaid student loan bills, and when she asked him about them, he kicked her out of the bed and told her to fuck off. These incidents that Colleen testified about during her trial became the cornerstone of her defense team's argument that she killed Rob to save her own life. Hiltner and Mills argued that the violent events in the months before Rob's murder led her to suffer from battered woman syndrome and to fear for her life the night she killed him. After building up a timeline of abuse Colleen had suffered, Mills asked her to recount the events of New Year's Eve before Rob's death. As Colleen spoke, the courtroom was so quiet you could hear a pin drop. Colleen testified that she had not wanted to go out on New Year's Eve. Instead, she wanted to make a list of her hopes and dreams for 2015 and host a kid-friendly party so that Rob's son could join in on the fun. She said Rob didn't want to do that, and she compromised by agreeing to go out with him. Rob wanted to go over to his friend Zach's house, she said, so they left for a few drinks at Kendall's Tavern around 7 p.m., and at 8 p.m., they made their way to Zach and Brittany's house. Around 10 p.m., they went to Tucker's Tavern with their friends, where they did several shots before walking back to Zach and Brittany's home. Colleen said they did argue a little on the way back, but had calmed down by the time they had reached their friend's house. A few minutes later, Colleen said she saw Rob doing some kind of drugs and it made her angry. Instead of making even more of a scene than they already had, she said they left and they agreed to try to salvage the night. She got into Rob's car and immediately started to feel unsafe. She testified that he peeled out of Zach and Brittany's driveway and then sped down the narrow streets on their way home. When they arrived home, she said Rob unbuckled her, ripped her out of the car, and screamed in her face. He pushed her into the house, she said, and screamed at her to go into the bedroom. She said she tried to call the cops on her iPhone, but Rob grabbed the phone from her hands. He grabbed her shoulders and shook her while screaming at her like some kind of animal, like a lion. Rob then went into the kitchen, she said, so she grabbed her gun, a loaded Glock 26 they kept in the bedroom. She testified that she tried to get out of the bedroom, but he cut her off as she tried to get to the stairs. She said she pointed the gun at him and yelled at him to back up. She said she remembered shooting Rob once, but couldn't remember pulling the trigger 10 times. During her testimony, she dissolved into tears, recalling what happened, and told the judge that once she realized what she had done, she, quote, held on to hope that the medical team would be able to do something. During cross-examination, prosecutor Dennis Barr asked Colleen if she always kept her gun on the bedroom windowsill, loaded with 10 bullets and one bullet in the chamber. Colleen said she did. He also asked why she didn't call 911 or why she didn't use her iPhone's easy access emergency call button. She responded that she had tried to call 911, but hadn't been able to before Rob grabbed her phone away. Barr also asked her to clarify where she had been in relation to Rob at the time of the shooting. He asked her to demonstrate how far away she had been from him when she shot him, and asked her to recount every movement she made between getting home and shooting Rob. Colleen said she couldn't remember how far away she was when she shot him, but she maintained that Rob had come at her before she had fired the first bullet. Barr then asked her why she didn't call 911 on him after the prior abuse, and asked if she had ever sought medical attention for any injuries she had suffered. Colleen said she had called 911 before, but had never made an official police report. She also said she was embarrassed of how she was treated and hadn't been ready to talk about the abuse with other people. He asked her, quote, "Has Rob ever punched you in the face?" Colleen said no, he had never punched her in the face. He had pushed her and shaken her, but never hit her. She said she never sought medical attention. After Colleen's testimony, her defense called two doctors to testify. Dr. Philip Resnick, a forensic psychiatrist, testified that Colleen showed typical symptoms of battered woman syndrome. He said that his opinion, with reasonable medical certainty, was that Colleen had suffered from battered woman syndrome prior to Rob's murder, which led to a heightened fight-or-flight response during the events of that night.
And doctor, did Colleen express whether or not she had fear every day of her marriage?
She did not describe a day-to-day fear. She did describe when he was intoxicated and had assaulted her. Then she pleaded with him to stop drinking, to get help to stop drinking, to get counseling so he would not be assaultive again, because she recognized that that's when he got out of control, was when he was drinking.
What significance did you place on the fact that Rob had promised to get mental health counseling and to stop drinking?
Well, again, when Ms. McKernan said, "You can't do this, you can't lay your hands on me, I'm going to get a divorce, I'm not going to put up with this," then he would say, express his contrition, "Please don't leave me. I can't live without you. I'll kill myself. I feel so terrible. I promise I'll change. I promise I'll get help. I promise I won't drink the way I have." So that is part of what's called the contrition phase in the cycle. Tension building, assault, and then the contrition phase.
Dr. Resnick testified that Colleen had suffered three prior abusive episodes with Rob before she shot him. He said the combination of drinking, possible drug use, verbal abuse, and physical abuse made her more fearful for her life than the average person. Dr. Roy Howard Lubitt, a forensic psychologist, also testified that Colleen exhibited common symptoms of disassociation on the night of the shooting. When a victim disassociates, he said they space out and feel as if the world around them is unreal. He also said that the ability to make decisions is slowed. Disassociation can be triggered by traumatic events and even the memory of past trauma, he said. After Dr. Lubitt's testimony, the defense rested, and prosecutors called their rebuttal witnesses to the stand. First up was Kathleen McKernan, Rob's mother, and she would claim that Colleen even told her, weeks before the shooting, that she would kill her son. Kathleen McKernan recounted an incident to the jury on November 23rd when Rob told her that he and Colleen were having problems. He had come over to the house around 8:30 that morning with a can of beer in his hand. Kathleen said Rob was visibly upset, and she asked him what was wrong. She said he told her, quote, "I guess according to my wife, I was an asshole last night. She said I drank too much and we were at a bar and I didn't want to go home and I was doing shots with a couple of buddies of mine. My wife says I drink too much." Kathleen said she told him that if he had a drinking problem, he would need to get help. She said he told her that he loved Colleen and wanted their marriage to work. He said, quote, "I'll do what I have to do." But later that day, around 2 p.m., Kathleen said Colleen called her and told her that the family dinner they had planned was canceled. Kathleen said Colleen told her that Rob was in bed and wouldn't help her clean the house. An hour or two later, Colleen asked if it was okay if she brought the dinner she had already cooked over to Kathleen's. After the two ate dinner, Colleen and Kathleen talked more about Rob's drinking. Colleen told her that the night before, they had gotten into an argument about their debit card.
She told me that he picked her up and slammed her back on the couch. And then she said he proceeded to tear up the house looking for his debit card. And I believe she said that he ended up finding it, or he found it because he was tearing up some things in the house looking for it, or she just went ahead and gave in and gave it to him.
Did she tell you, other than picking him up or picking her up and slamming her on the couch, that he did anything else to her?
I asked her, I said, did he hit you? And she said, no, he didn't hit me. He just threw me back on the couch.
Did she tell you that he grabbed her by her hair and drug her down the hall?
No.
Did she tell you that she kicked him in the groin?
No.
Did she tell you that the dog bit him?
No.
When Rob came over in the morning, did he complain about a dog bite?
No.
When she told you this, what did you say?
What did I say? I asked her if he hit her. But she just, you know, she said no again.
And then Colleen said something else.
Did she ever say anything else to you that evening?
Yes.
What did she tell you?
She said, no man is going to lay his hands on me. And she looked at Mike and I and she said, I'm telling the both of you right now that if he ever lays his hands on me again, I will shoot, and I will shoot to kill him.
Up next in the prosecution's rebuttal was Kelly Benefante, Colleen's friend who had introduced the couple. Kelly testified that she and Colleen had been friends since high school, but had lost touch for a few years before Colleen came back to Massillon. They reconnected and quickly became close. She said Colleen never said anything to her about Rob abusing her, and she never saw any injuries on Colleen either. But she was once a witness to an incident where Colleen punched Rob in the face in the parking lot of a bar. She couldn't remember a lot of the details during her testimony, but said she remembers at some point during the night leaving the bar because she got a phone call. Once outside, she could hear Rob and Colleen arguing. They didn't notice her come out, even though she was just a few feet from them. She looked over and saw Colleen punch him in the face. During her own testimony, prosecutors had asked Colleen about this very incident. She said they had been arguing when Rob grabbed her face, and so she punched him in self-defense to get away. She said he then pushed her to the ground. After Kelly testified, Rob and Colleen's neighbor, Judy Schmucker, then testified. Judy had been social with the McKernans frequently since they had moved into the neighborhood in May of 2014. Judy described for the court an instance where she was getting ready to go to bed when Colleen knocked on her door repeatedly. She said she called out asking who it was because it was late, and Colleen responded, so she opened the door. She told the jury that Colleen was whining and told her that Rob was abusing her, and so Judy let her inside.
All right, can you explain to us what you observed? I believe you first stated whining. Correct?
Yes.
Okay. What other specific things did you note about her appearance? What were you observing?
What she said to me was, Rob abuses me.
Okay. I'm going to back you up a little bit. What was her emotional demeanor at that point in time?
She said, Rob abuses me. And she said it in that tone.
Okay. Let me ask you this. Was she loud?
Yes.
Okay. Was she crying?
No.
Did you observe any injuries to her that evening?
No.
Did you notice anything about her appearance in the sense that she appeared to be under the influence of anything?
Yes.
Okay. Did you smell anything?
Yes.
What did you smell?
Alcohol.
And did you have an opinion as to whether she was intoxicated?
Yes.
And what was your opinion?
That she was.
And, all right, so you started to say that she indicated to you that Rob abused her, correct?
Yes.
Did she go into any specifics with you?
Yes.
What did she tell you?
She told me that he shoved her face against the window and then pointed to her arms and said, but there's no marks.
During cross-examination, Colleen's attorney questioned Judy about an incident where she helped Colleen look for Rob after he didn't come home one night. Judy said she and Colleen drove to a bar in Massillon around 5 a.m. looking for Rob one night. They didn't find him, and Judy said Colleen was concerned that he had been cheating on her. The final witness for the prosecution's rebuttal was Dr. James Karpowicz, a licensed clinical psychologist for 27 years, who took the witness stand for almost 2 hours. Dr. Karpowicz, who has testified as an expert witness in Ohio's courts more than 100 times, said he evaluated Colleen for battered woman syndrome for 7 hours on October 23, 2015, and completed his report on December 4, 2015. His testimony was a direct contrast to the evaluations performed by Dr. Lubit and Dr. Resnick, who found that Colleen did suffer from battered woman syndrome. Dr. Karpowicz said that battered woman syndrome, which he referred to as battered spouse syndrome, is a theoretical condition that is, quote, not a valid diagnosis. He argued that because battered spouse syndrome is reliant on self-reporting, it's hard to validate and corroborate the syndrome's existence. He said battered spouse syndrome is a learned behavior where the individual is helpless, has no friends, and is unable to take action against their spouse. He said the syndrome can include both men and women, and that recent research suggested that the number of women suffering from the syndrome has gone down, while the number of men suffering from it has increased. He said it affects each gender differently, but that research suggests that men tend to face more lethal forms of violence at the hands of their spouse. Prosecutor Melissa Day asked him how he evaluates for battered spouse syndrome. Dr. Karpowicz responded that he looks for corroboration to prove the abuse and also looks for consistency in the victim's story. Then he looks for psychological factors like post-traumatic stress disorder, depression, anxiety, feelings of helplessness, and low self-esteem that indicate battered spouse syndrome. In his testimony, Dr. Karpowicz said he didn't see any symptoms of the syndrome in Colleen. He said she was very talkative, had no problems recalling memories, and showed very little anxiety.
During those 7+ hours, there were no signs of depression, no tears, no crying, very little anxiety. In fact, the only anxiety she showed was when I asked her to do some test of concentration. And I remarked how this was very different than her presentation earlier. And she said this was only the third time that she discussed all these details with someone. So she came in very talkative, provided with a lot of information, but no strong emotions that any of this was upsetting.
He said she used the term cycle of violence in their meeting, which to him meant that she had read up on what battered spouse syndrome was.
During the evaluation, when I was discussing her relationship with Rob, she used the term cycle of violence, which is a phrase used for battered woman syndrome.
And, sir, in that meeting with the defendant, was there any indication that she had reviewed any documentation prior to her interview with you on October 23rd, 2015?
Yes.
And what did she indicate that she had reviewed?
I was surprised she had used that term because it is a term used for people with battered woman syndrome. And I asked her about that phrase. Where did she pick up that phrase? She said that she had worked in a shelter for women who've been battered up in Buffalo about 5 years earlier. And that's when she did research and learned about battered woman syndrome. I asked if she had read anything else about that, and she was vague. She did say is that her attorney had advised her to do no research on battered woman syndrome before she came in and saw me. So I don't know when she reviewed any information about that.
He also said it was clear to him that she had read through all the police reports and evidence presented to the court. He said this was difficult for him because he felt that he was getting filtered, rehearsed information from her and not an honest evaluation.
Did she indicate she had reviewed any other documentation other than it relates to specifically battered woman syndrome?
Yes.
And in general, what did she indicate she had reviewed?
By the time that she saw me, she indicated that all the information that the court and the prosecutor had given to her attorney, she had reviewed all that information. So it wasn't like evaluating, I do most defendants. They have not seen what they call the discovery. They have not seen the police reports. They have not seen the records. They have not seen the witness statements. In this case, she indicated that she has received all that material so that when I asked her questions, she knew exactly who had said what to the police. So that was made it much more challenging because she already knew what people said. So rather than giving a spontaneous comment, she knew exactly who said what. When I would say, somebody said this, she would say, oh, that was so-and-so. So she knew that very well what witnesses had said.
He said Colleen did not qualify for the criteria for battered spouse syndrome. He said she was a strong, alpha-type woman who wanted control over her situation. He said she showed no helplessness and described herself as stronger than most individuals. He also said she showed no signs of low self-esteem, and he said no witnesses testified that she had suffered from low self-worth. Dr. Karpowicz also evaluated Colleen for depression and found that she didn't report any symptoms and noted that none of Colleen's friends told police that she had been depressed either. He also pointed out that Colleen had never been isolated from her friends or family by Rob.
The women that I've dealt with who have been in bad relationships, they are trapped. They have no friends. They've been cut off from their family. They have no resources. They have no money. They're dependent upon their spouse to support them. So there's no financial alternatives. There is no social alternatives. They're just trapped in this relationship. She was the antithesis of this, had a good relationship with her family, she told me, good relationship with friends. Rob was on the road a lot, so she was out pursuing her career, spending time with friends. She wasn't isolated in the home by herself with no alternatives. I talked to her about finances were an issue. She complained about the way that Rob handled finances. She owned the house, so she wasn't dependent upon him. She had good credit. She said he didn't. So I asked her why she didn't get her own credit, her own bank account, if she was concerned, and she indicated that if she did, Rob would expect that she would contribute 50% to the household, and she didn't think that was fair. So again, we're having a woman that has her own resources, her own home, her own friends, her own family. This is not someone that had no alternatives, either socially or financially.
He said during their interview, Colleen criticized and ridiculed Rob. He said she made fun of his bad credit and called him a bad parent. He also said Colleen wanted to be in control of their relationship and that she had the upper hand because she owned the house and had good credit. He testified that during interviews with Colleen's friends, he learned that Colleen would often start and escalate the fights with Rob in social settings. He pointed out in his testimony that he could not corroborate the abuse Colleen said she suffered. He said there were no hospital records and no police reports to back up her claims. Prosecutor Melissa Day asked him if he had any clinical concerns about the evaluations done by Dr. Resnick and Dr. Lubit. As you'll remember from earlier in the episode, Dr. Resnick testified that Colleen suffered from battered woman syndrome, And Dr. Lubit said she showed signs of being in a disassociative state when she shot Rob. Dr. Karpowicz tore into Dr. Resnick and Dr. Lubit's evaluations. He said Dr. Resnick did not do a thorough enough job investigating her mental state. He said a good clinician would have interviewed her, done testing, collected other testimony from friends and family, and then compared it to other information available. Instead, he said Dr. Resnick just took what Colleen told him and made a diagnosis off of her testimony. As for Dr. Lubit's testimony, Dr. Karpowicz said Colleen's testimony of the shooting does not line up with the guidelines for a disassociative state. He said Colleen wouldn't have been able to remember Rob coming towards her or remember pulling the trigger if that had been the case. During cross-examination, Colleen's attorney, Laura Mills, pointed out that Dr. Karpowicz evaluated Colleen 10 months after the shooting and tried to poke holes in his testimony. She also asked him if every woman with battered woman syndrome had to exhibit every symptom he described. He responded that not every criteria has to be met, but at least some of them do. Colleen's attorney also questioned his assessment that Colleen was the person who escalated the frequent fights with Rob. She argued that Rob was the one who was physical with Colleen and who even called Colleen a number of demeaning names. Dr. Karpowicz said that Rob's behavior did not translate to Colleen suffering from battered spouse syndrome. And he said that in every violent incident Colleen described, alcohol was a primary factor. He said they were isolated incidents that did not indicate a wider pattern or a cycle of violence.
And Dr. Colleen also told you that Rob had grabbed her by the hair when she tried to leave, and he pulled her by the hair down to the bedroom while she was kicking and screaming, correct?
That's what she said after she said she kicked him in the privates. He fell to the floor, and then she claimed that he stopped her from leaving. She couldn't explain how he got off the floor and stopped her from leaving.
That was the description of what I just read, correct?
She alleged that he grabbed her by the hair and dragged her to the bedroom as she was kicking and screaming.
Now, in each one of those incidences, there's certainly quite a bit of tension between Rob and Colleen. Would you agree with that?
It appears in each of those incidents there wasn't tension to begin with. The tension began over arguments that Colleen admitted she started on each of those occasions, either earlier that night.
Doctor, you're certainly not saying that if Colleen started a verbal argument that she deserved any type of abuse, correct?
No, I didn't say that.
And the tension building phase that's described in the cycle, there's no requirement that the batter be the one that starts a verbal argument, correct?
No, that's not what the tension building stage means. They're talking about incidents that go on for weeks or months between these incidents. We're talking about one night within hours, someone starts an argument, which Colleen admitted she usually did. Those arguments escalated. That's not what they talked about with the tension building stage.
Okay. You don't think there's any tension building when Rob doesn't want her to wear any makeup when she goes to work?
She never said that to me.
You don't think there's any tension building when Rob doesn't want her to go out with her friends?
She told me she went out with her friends all the time. Rob was on the road.
You don't think there's any tension building when Rob doesn't want her to go to the military?
She made that comment to me, but that's not necessarily tension building.
You don't think there's any tension building when Rob called Colleen a whore or a cunt or a bitch?
Again, these are words she used. I didn't hear anybody corroborate any of that information.
But that's what she told you, correct?
Yeah, but that doesn't mean it's tension building. That's what she's saying after the fact.
Mills then asked Dr. Karpowicz if he had seen a text message Rob had sent to Colleen a month before his death. The text read, quote, "I hate myself for putting my hands on you. I wish someone would beat my ass because that's definitely what the fuck I deserve." She asked him if he had seen the threats Rob had made to Colleen, that he'd kill himself or make her life a living hell, that he knew everyone in Massillon and would never let her go. Dr. Karpowicz said that he had only seen the report that Rob would make her life a living hell, but none of the other threats. Colleen's second trial lasted for 8 days, and closing arguments were made on the morning of August 31st. Prosecutor Dennis Barr asked jurors to make sure that the state had proven its case against Colleen without a shadow of a doubt. He said they needed to prove Colleen had intended to kill Rob when she shot him. He noted that Rob's car keys were found by his body, proving that he'd been on his way out the door when Colleen shot him. He had his keys because he was leaving, as he usually did. They had a fight and he was going to leave. He was going to go away, he said. Barr, then holding up the gun Colleen used to shoot Rob, asked the jurors to weigh the quality of the prosecution's evidence with the defense's evidence. He said that everyone could relate to the problems Colleen and Rob had endured, the troubles with money, alcohol, and routine arguments that had escalated into fights.
This was not a perfect relationship. It was very tumultuous. They both drank. That night, she's admitted she had 2 Jaegers, 4 shots of moonshine, and 1 beer in 3 hours. And when they drank, as you heard, Colleen liked to instigate things. She liked to start fights. And when she instigated things, she claims that Rob got physical. But there's nothing to corroborate that. But what is clear is that she had no problem battering Rob. She had no problem punching him in the face twice, once in the parking lot at Lou's, and as his mother told you, once after they got in an argument about Bentley. And she admitted, I just hauled off and punched him in the face. She had no problem kicking him in the groin. But there's no medical records, no photos, no police reports. And the one time she did call 911, she told him, no, I don't want to make a report. I just want him to go, not come home. And he did.
Barr said the case comes down to credibility issues. He said that jurors would either believe that Colleen was telling the truth and base their opinions off solely what she testified to, or believe Dr. Karpowicz, who did testing and talked to witnesses. He said that Colleen's testimony was one-sided and that Rob couldn't be in court to tell his story because she had killed him. In his 30-minute-long closing argument, Barr said Rob never hit Colleen or caused her bodily harm, despite her testimony that she had been abused multiple times before she shot and killed him. He called her a competent, secure woman, an Air Force security officer who wanted to be a leader, not a follower. He argued that Colleen shot to kill Rob and questioned again the details of where Colleen was in relation to Rob. He said the scattered shell casings in the hallway were evidence that Colleen had followed Rob as he had backed away, and that the lack of blood was an indication that a violent struggle had never occurred before his death. Barr reminded the jurors of the 911 call Colleen made after she shot him. Quote, "What are the first words out of Colleen's mouth during that call? Listen to me, I'm intoxicated. She's already setting up her defense. She's already setting up an excuse to get out of this." After Barr's closing argument, Laura Mills addressed the jury. She said that if Rob had shot Colleen, they'd be attending a very different trial. Mills described Colleen as a hardworking, responsible woman who was college-educated and financially stable. Colleen soon realized that she was married to a man who was abusive and violent. Mills pointed out that Rob was 200 pounds and 6 inches taller than Colleen, and that Colleen feared for her life when he pushed her and screamed at her. She said that Prosecutor Barr's closing argument that there wasn't enough blood spattered around the scene to indicate a violent struggle was invalid. She said, quote, "This is not the movies, ladies and gentlemen. The blood wasn't going to spurt out. Where was all the blood? The blood was inside the body." As for Barr's claim that Colleen didn't suffer regular violent abuse, Mills went over every incident that Colleen described in court. She said Rob smothered Colleen until she was unconscious and then tried to revive her in a cold shower, saying over and over again, "Don't die, please don't die." She reminded the jury that there was evidence that Colleen had reported abuse. She had called 911 in November. She had told Judy Schmucker, and she had even told Rob's mom. Mills said the state's claim that Rob was about to leave because his keys were still near his body when he was shot also didn't make any sense. She said that Rob, of course, had his keys on him when he died because they had just driven home. She emphasized the defense's argument that Colleen killed Rob out of self-defense. She said the events on the night in question mirrored the violent incidents that Colleen had survived before. She asked the jury, quote, "Can you imagine not being safe in your own home, not because of an intruder, but because of your own husband?" She said Colleen never wanted to go out that night, that instead she wanted to stay home and think about her goals for 2015. Rob, however, wanted to go out, get drunk, and do drugs. At 11 p.m. on December 31st, she said Colleen knew that Rob had been drinking and possibly had drugs in his system. She knew that Rob had prior domestic violence arrests and that he had abused her before.
Colleen has waited a long time for today. You were all here because you were chosen and have been empowered with the ability to do justice. I know that you will not compromise, but you will hold hard to your beliefs and that you will not ignore your conscience, and your common sense will guide you. We ask that you return a not guilty verdict to the charge of murder against Colleen McKernan.
After the defense's closing argument, the state was allowed a brief rebuttal. Barr said that none of the evidence presented during the trial supports the defense's theory that Colleen killed Rob out of self-defense. He showed a series of videos to the jury that showed Colleen the night she killed Rob. The first video shows Colleen slapping the table after doing one of the four shots she took at the bar. A second video shows Colleen in a striped prison jumpsuit, yelling and screaming in her cell. Barr closed his presentation by showing pictures of Rob's body. He said, quote, "That's the real Colleen McKernan, not the one that dressed up for you on the stand. That's the anger. That's the alcohol. That's the murder." The jurors were instructed to bring a decision back to Judge Hartnett as soon as possible. But again, after 2 days, the jury was deadlocked. It was a moment of deja vu for the prosecutors and for Colleen's defense team. On September 2nd, 2016, Judge Hartnett officially ruled Colleen's second trial a mistrial. A third trial was then scheduled for April of 2017. Colleen and her defense team began to prepare for that third trial. But in March of 2017, she agreed to a plea deal. Colleen pleaded guilty a month before her third trial was supposed to start. She pleaded to a reduced charge of involuntary manslaughter. She was sentenced by Judge Hartnett to 7 years with a chance for early release. Under Ohio law, Colleen could end up serving a minimum of 3 years and 6 months of her sentence. Her first chance for parole will be in September 2020. And that's all for today's episode. As always, I'd love to know what you think. Did Colleen act in self-defense? Or did she kill Rob in a burst of anger, as the prosecution argued? And if you believed Colleen's story, would you have pleaded to a lesser charge? You can let me know by joining our conversation on Instagram at Court Junkie, by tweeting me at Court Junkie Pod, or by emailing me at podcast@courtjunkie.com. This episode was researched and written by Kathleen McWilliams. Thanks everyone for listening. Until next time.